Welcome back to the Better Everyday Podcast, where we're unlocking our best self one episode at a time. My name is Grace Garcia, and this is my co-host, my husband, my partner in life, David Garcia.
Yo.
So just how we've been starting every single episode. Any updates? What's happening in your life? Anything you want to share with our followers?
Not too much. My life has been pretty normal this last week. I don't think I have anything notable.
Ankle is still, you went to the doctor.
Oh gosh. Yeah. That's like a whole story. So yeah, it's been 4 weeks since I've ran, and I've had a couple of people like, hey, have you gone to see the doctor? Hey, have you gone to see the doctor? And like, I don't want to get into like back and forth with people. So in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to go to the doctor. It's going to be a waste of time. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't want to go back and forth with people, you know, like that are trying to help, you know, showing love and concern that way, you know. So I'm like, you know, yeah, I'll eventually get there. But after week four of not being able to run, I'm like, all right, I'm going to cave. Like 4 weeks is a long time for, like, I've rolled my ankle before, I've sprained it. And like, I know that's like 4 to 6 weeks. This time it wasn't sprained. There was no bruising. There was no swelling. So I'm like, how is this 4 weeks? And now that I hit four, like week four, I'm like, okay, might as well get it checked out. I'm hoping, you know, I did go in hopeful. And I went to this place, I looked it up, it had great reviews. Doctor had great reviews. Go in, they did an x-ray. They got me in really fast, you know, shout out to our PPO. They got me in super fast, did an x-ray. The doctor came in. She was like, hey, I read your note, but let me know like what's going on. I let her know everything. She touched my ankle. She's like, does any of this hurt? I'm like, no. She's explained to me like what's going on. And I explained it to and she's like, yeah, I think I'm going to order MRI because right now I have no idea what's going on. And I'm just like, I deflated. My bubble got deflated. I'm just like, came here for answers, and I lost an hour of overtime at work to make this doctor's appointment. So for me to lose that and then go with hopes of I'm going to get an answer, like I was telling somebody today, I don't even care if they were like, you're never going to walk again. You know, like I just wanted to know like what is going on so I can accept it and just like, okay, I'm going to have to deal with this, you know?
Yeah.
But like for her to be like, I have no idea. And then I was just like, should I run? She's like, well, if it hurts, I guess not. But if it doesn't hurt, I guess run. And I'm like, so I might run, make it worse. And then like, it was just so annoying. And that's kind of my pet peeve with doctors is like, usually you go and they either go like, I have no idea. Let's give it a couple of weeks and we'll see where you're at. And that's the worst. Like, a couple of weeks, and what if I got worse in 2 weeks? Like, and you just gonna ignore me for 2 weeks? Like, help me out. Like,
yeah,
low key, like, without being rude, I'm just like, what do they pay you for? Like, what did you go to school for? Like, help me out. But yeah, anyways, you can note the frustration. But she did give me these pills that are disinflammatory pills or something like that. It's supposed to help. I don't really know. Low-key, I'm hoping that it's like a whole placebo effect, that I feel better because of these pills that I'm taking. And tomorrow I'm going to actually try to run a little bit. At first I was like, I should run 4 miles. And then I'm like, today I was at the gym and I was lifting, and I was lifting these heavy weights and I was putting them back on the rack. And I guess I moved my foot a certain way and I felt like a little bit of like something. And I'm like, oh my goodness, are you serious? I'm just like, okay, maybe I shouldn't run 4 miles tomorrow. Maybe I should just run like 1.5 or 2 or something like that. So, oh my goodness, I'm hoping. I'm going to be using new shoes, so hopefully that helps. But yeah. Yeah, a little disappointed, a little deflated. I'm hoping the run goes good tomorrow. If 1.5 or 2 feels good tomorrow, then Friday I'll go for another 2 or 3. And then my plan was to do 6 on Sunday, but it'll really depend. Like if I feel like no pain day after these next couple of runs, then I'll probably do 6. If not, then I might have to dwindle it down to like 3 or 4. But that I have to get my butt into gear. I have to, because this Saturday is going to be only 12 weeks left in the until the marathon.
That's wild.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's what I really hope for your sake. And well, for my sake too. They can do it.
I'm hoping because, yeah, like it's messing with my head, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what's going on with you?
I think the same, not much has changed. Did another personal record this weekend, 8 miles.
Dang.
Felt really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I feel like I could keep going. Like, part of me just wants to do a half marathon without, like, before it, to see if I could do it.
Yeah.
But.
Tell them about the sponsor that you got.
Oh, the Better Every Mile sponsored me, got me Shock headphones.
Shocks,
my bad. Shocks headphones and then a Garmin heart rate monitor.
Okay, you're not explaining again. So the Shocks headphones are really cool. And I showed them to her and she really wanted to get them. And then I was like 50-50. She's like, I don't really have money right now. So I'm like, oh, there was Amazon Prime Day that's going on between the 8th and the 11th or something like that. And so they're usually like almost $200 and they were $125 for Amazon Prime Day. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to get them. I'm going to use them and I know that Grace is going to use them. And the cool thing about them is like they don't go into your ear. They kind of sit outside of your ear. But they still have really good sound. And because they sit outside of the ear, it makes your run, especially if you're female, makes your run so much safer because then you can also be audibly aware of what's going on in your surroundings. Because most of the time nowadays, the earbuds are like noise canceling. Mm. So all you're hearing is the music or whatever podcast that you're listening to. And it's hard to hear around what's going on. But these are really cool because they make it really safe and they sound really great, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy science, whatever. And then the heart rate monitor, homegirl over here is running 8 miles. She's like, I feel like great. I could do more. So on and so forth.
I can.
And I'm like, that's awesome. But I'm like, one of the risks that you run when you are running and then running a lot is that if your runs aren't easy, they say that 80% of your runs should be easy runs. Why? Because A, you are avoiding injury. B, it's faster to recover. So the next day you're already ready to go again. And then if you go too hard, too much, then you're risking an injury. You're risking overworking yourself. You're risking kind of going into the gray area where you're not really growing anymore. You kind of just either, well, you're not even staying stagnant. You're kind of like going backwards because you're overworking your body. So I told her it's very important for you to get a watch or a heart rate monitor. And again, she was like, oh, I don't really have money for that. I don't know when I'm going to have money for it. And I'm like, okay, the Better Every Mile will sponsor you and we'll get you the very best heart rate chest monitor, which she used today. And the funny thing is that she comes back. She's like, it's impossible to stay in zone two.
It's so annoying. I mean, to be honest, when I do like my 3 miles and stuff, those don't seem easy, but I think it's a head thing. I think I got bored of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. My long runs do seem easy. I'm like, I could keep going. And maybe it's my head, I don't know. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be doing this 3 miles. I'm going to make it under my zone two. Like I already was aware I was going to have to run a little slower.
Mm-hmm.
But no, usually my runs are like 11:30, 12. I think I got improved to like 12.
And I wonder how fast your heart rate was in those times.
And today was like almost like 15, 30, almost 16 minutes.
No, it was 15. Mile. You're exaggerating. It was a 15.
It was like 15:40.
That's so slow.
And literally like I'd have to walk to get it to zone two. I'm like, this is so annoying. And I told David it could be because I got a jogging stroller. And so I was like pushing it. And maybe my body's not used to like pushing something while I'm running. But there was a moment where I was like uphill incline. And just walking uphill with the stroller made me go over zone two. And I'm like, no, hombre. Like I'm so annoyed.
But the thing with that is so many factors go into that. If you're not properly hydrated, your heart rate goes up. If it's too hot outside, your heart rate goes up. If you're ill, your heart rate goes up. Like if you had a hard workout the day before, your heart rate goes up.
So
like there's so many reasons why your heart rate goes up. which is pretty crazy. But yeah.
Yeah. So that was a little disheartening. I'm like, what the heck? Like, cause yesterday I went to physical therapy and again, she didn't even check me. She was like, you've been doing good. Let's just do your strength training workout. Mm-hmm. So I worked out for like an hour. Usually it's a little less cause she checks me, has these conversations.
So is it like not really like physical training anymore? Is it just straight up like a personal trainer now?
Kind of. And I am loving it.
For like, don't tell my insurance. For like $9 a week. That's pretty good.
Yo, she's amazing. Like, she just loved that I said I wanted to go running.
Yeah.
And again, she's a runner herself. And so she's like, bet, I'm gonna get you there.
Yeah.
And so we did workouts and I felt stronger. Like I was just happy. I'm like, I'm feeling stronger. I feel like I'm noticing a difference. And so it's crazy how like in your journey, you could be feeling so strong the next. And then today you're just like, what the heck? This, mm-hmm. I can't even be in zone two. I'm like walking. And so Friday I'll try again with the heart rate monitor without the jogging stroller to see if that makes a difference.
You have to be hydrated as well.
Yeah, I kind of do suck at that department.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saturday, my goal is with shout out Nancy, is to do with her, I think we're doing 9 miles. So.
Oh, also carbs. If you don't have enough carbs, your heart rate's going to go up.
Yeah, so it's just so annoying. But that's...
You got to be locked in.
I'm trying. Baby steps.
Baby steps, and you've gone from like 3 miles to 9 miles in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean,
if you want to be that type of locked in, you got to be that type of locked in.
I guess I do think for me, it's a mental thing. Like I'm not the strongest person, but I feel like if I set my mind on something, like I just do it.
Okay, well, set your mind on getting your water in, get your electrolytes in, get your carbs in.
Yeah, I have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but let's begin this podcast, shall we? A couple weeks ago, was it already 2 weeks ago? A couple weeks ago, I went to a women's retreat that our church hosted. Shout out to RTLA. They call it like the Tribe Sisters Retreat. So I went away to Palm Springs. And it was something happened that in my life was like pretty powerful. And I came back home like super excited and I told you and I was like, you know, we should do a podcast about this because I think a lot of people deal with shame and truly until you get to the other side, you're like, oh, that felt like just a weight off your shoulders and you don't even realize the baggage that you're carrying because you get so used to it.
Yeah.
That until it's lifted off, you're like, wow, I felt better. And so I'm gonna talk about that. About my experience, and I hope people, maybe you're just chismoso and you like the story, the lore, but hopefully you again see the importance, the power I think of shame and the importance of letting go. So that's what today is. But first I want to ask you, before I go into my whole story, have you dealt with shame? I feel like
I think you should tell your story first.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's going to lay down the foundation of context.
Okay, we'll lay down the story first.
So what happened?
So we were listening to a few speakers, and there was Pastor Sandy. I don't know if she watches our podcast, but she was talking about shame. And there was like different levels to shame. And I think there was 4 or 5. Sorry if I don't really remember. But... I remember her listing them off and I was like, that first one, no, I didn't like, what is it? Relate. Second, I'm like, no. Third, like I didn't relate to almost any of them until she hit the last one. And I was like, oh, I do relate to that one. I wonder if I have it. But there was a time for ministering after. And then they basically like said, like, if you feel shame, like you can go up to the, front. And God spoke to me and was like, go to the front because you've been dealing with shame. And in my head, I'm like, what the heck? Like, I haven't. And he brought into my mind an event, which I'll talk to the end because I want people to stay tuned. And so I remember going to the front and I was like, okay, God, I guess I do have shame in my life. And I was like surrendering it to him. Like, I don't want anything. I don't want anything to hold me back. And I hear him like, tell me, okay, like, if you're giving this, surrendering this shame to me, like, I want to see action, right? Like, I don't want you just to say it, but do it. And so, and I was like, oh, I can tell anyone, like, I'm free, whatever, right? And he's like, okay, tell Melody, your sister. And that's what I was like, I hesitated, because for me, I think if you're an older sibling, you probably relate. But for me, it's like, I need to be a good example. In my head, I've been a good example, and I feel like I am a good example. And so there's like this weight of kind of not being perfect, but this weight of setting good example, being a good role model in all areas of my life. And so I was like, oh man, like, she has this image of me and I'm just going to destroy it. Right.
Okay. Let's pause right there. Cause I, you kind of explained it, but, I think there's more to it, because my question was, what is the difference? Cause you said, oh yeah, I can share this with anybody. And that you felt God was like, no, share it with your sister Melody. Mm-hmm. And so you explain, well, she has this high expectation of me, or she sees me in this high way. And that's kind of what caused you to like hesitate. But yeah. Do you think there's more to that? Cause right now you're painting it, because she sees me at this high level, I don't want to let her down.
Yeah, or I think part of me is, as dumb as it might sound, it's like, I've kept this facade for so long. Like, why now?
So, isn't that kind of crazy, though? Like, with strangers, you're like, I'll take off all my masks. Mm-hmm. I'll show everybody anything. But with the people closest to me, which that is like your sister, yeah, it's really hard for you to take off that mask.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying, though, is that you kind of were protecting her, that you weren't protecting yourself. But my question now is, if we dig a little deeper, were you protecting yourself? And right now you're chalking it up to, I was protecting her.
Oh, for sure. I think it's both of us. I think in me seeing automatically her like disappointed or upset, that hurts me. And it's like, I failed. And I'm such a people pleaser. And we've talked about this in our people pleasing episode, which you guys should watch. And like a go-getter. And so that label of like, I failed, it, I think it weighs more on me than other people because of this like people pleasing, like I need, and words of affirmation is super important for me. And just like this go-getter. Mm-hmm. And so I for sure think it would hurt me. And there was a mask to protect myself as well.
And so the other thing that I hear you saying as well is that if you would have shared this with a stranger, well, let me ask you, if you would have shared this with a stranger and they would have reacted negatively, how would you have reacted?
It would have probably reinforced, like, okay, you can't tell those closest to you. Like, it would have just reinforced.
How much do you think it would have affected you? Like, honestly, and I hope you're being honest, open and transparent.
I think it would affect me.
Like a lot?
I think so, yeah. Because I feel like I already failed myself.
And so I was, and it wouldn't matter who the stranger was?
I don't think so.
Wow.
I think like I'm trying to imagine, like, let's say I put it on YouTube or something, like a random faceless subscriber or a person, not even a subscriber, like commented like, wow, how could you, or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think because I already failed myself and I already felt like a failure, they're just drilling that, like, you are.
But it is interesting to me that you say, I can openly share this part of my life with anybody. That right there already kind of tells me, like, I don't really care how they react. But now that I'm asking and probing, you're kind of saying I do care. So then now I'm like, what then is the difference between you sharing with a stranger and you sharing with your family?
Because I feel like when I've shared it with strangers in the past, because I have, like, there's not, they're just like, oh, okay. Like, I haven't gotten a negative response.
Oh, okay. So you openly share with strangers because you believe that they'll have a positive response. Like, you haven't had a negative.
Yeah.
You haven't had a negative response. You've felt like some sort of level of understanding, some sort of level of empathy, some sort of level of like, okay, I get it. I get where you're coming from. Like,
yeah. Or because they don't know me, they don't really care.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't have the same morals and they're like, okay, that's not a big deal. And so it hasn't.
And then that also brings up the question, and maybe I'm probing too much about the wrong things, but like, I'm curious. Do you feel like your family or this one particular family member is less empathetic and less understanding?
I don't think so.
Because let me just like paint what you've said. I can share with whoever. I asked you why. You said, I haven't had a negative reaction from anybody. So I feel free to be able to share this and know that I'm not going to get like something that's going to make me clam up.
Yeah.
But with this family member or family members, I don't want to share because, and then you said, I'll let them down, how they react. So that kind of like tells a story of you don't think that your family is that empathetic or that loving or accepting or...
Maybe, but I just feel like because I've gone for so long not sharing it, like it kind of makes it worse, you know, where it's like you've already...
Because, okay, in simpler terms, like this didn't go exactly how I thought it was going to go. Because again, what I heard when you said I could share it with anybody was I'm secure enough in myself that if somebody I don't really know has a negative reaction, then it's not really going to shake me at all because, you know, it is what it is. They're going to have their own reaction. They're not close to me. And then I heard you say, well, it's harder for me to tell my family because I'll let them down. And also, you know, like that's going to affect me because I already feel like a failure. And so then right there, I was going to kind of like bridge it all to like the vulnerability part that we've talked about a couple of episodes ago, where I personally said, I thought I was being vulnerable with people, but in reality, if my heart is a house, I had built a fence around it. And when I thought I was being vulnerable, I had simply moved the fence a little bit more closer to the house, not really letting anybody into the house. And so I was going to kind of chalk it up to it's when you're more open and vulnerable with people, there's a higher expectation rather than when you don't, when you aren't really, like when you don't know somebody, you haven't been vulnerable with them. They don't really know your story or whatever. For you to tell a story like that, it's just like, okay, if they have a negative reaction, like, oh, well, like you're out there in the outer skirts of my fence. You're not in my house.
Yeah.
But for somebody to be in your house and then be disappointed, that hurts even more.
Yeah.
But that's not really what you said.
No, but I still think it works that way because if someone outside the fence, let's say like someone I don't know hurts me, but if that same family member has the same reaction, hurts me, that hurt is way more.
Mm-hmm.
It goes deeper.
Yeah.
So if I could still kind of... plays out the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But back to my story.
Yes.
So I heard God say that and that's how I was like, like that obviously I was able to tell at that moment, like, okay, maybe I'm not that comfortable with it. But I feel like God was like challenging me or not challenging me, but wanting it just for me to completely let it go. And so I told him, okay, if it happens today, like if there's a perfect opportunity, like I'm not going to just randomly be like, hey, Melo, I have something to tell you. I was like, if it happens organically, naturally today, and it had to be today, then it's from you, God. And I'm not hearing like my own voice, like it's from you. You know, sometimes you feel like, I don't know about anyone, but for me, I'm like, am I hearing God's voice? Is it my conscience? And so I was like, I wanted to make sure I wasn't fooling myself. So after we had a wedding, after the retreat, after the sessions, we had to get ready for a wedding. It was my stepsister. And we not that we didn't want to go, like we knew her wedding was going to be gorgeous and stuff, but it's like, oh, we're going to kind of get out of the ambiente, like the atmosphere of the retreat, right? Like be disconnected from the girls and that like presence. And so we're like, okay, whatever. And we went like, it's about an hour away and we were just talking like lighthearted stuff. And I was like, we got to the wedding and I'm like, oh yeah, like this vibe is completely different. Like, I don't even know if we're going to have a chance to talk about this. Like, it doesn't make sense in my head.
Mm-hmm.
We did the wedding and then we came back from the wedding. I honestly don't even know how we started having a more serious conversation. But on the way back from the wedding, we started talking about some things like she struggles with. And she was being like very vulnerable and allowing me to like see behind the mask and like speak to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying how she was dealing with shame. And I was like, okay, like I have to. We're talking about shame. Like, God, I see clearly where... like, I have to talk about it. And so I told her, like, Melody, you're not the only one dealing with shame. She's like, what? And so, like, remember when you saw me in the front? She's like, yeah, I was wondering, like, why are you going to the front? Like, what are you dealing with, you know?
Hmm.
And then I specifically told her. Like, I told her. And she had no idea. She was like, her response was like, I love you. Like, there's no way you can disappoint me. Like, I see God's story in you. Like, all, like, she was nothing but loving, right? Mm. So then that was, again, we ended up talking for like 2 hours. That was the night before. That next morning, I wake up at like 6 to do a run. So a little bit earlier than 6 to do a run. And mind you, we fell asleep like at 2 a.m. So I did not want to do this run, but I already made plans. I do a run. I am exhausted. That I decide to take like a nap. I want to take a nap. And Melody wakes up. She gets ready and she's like, hey, are you going to come with me to the first session or whatever? And I didn't want to because it was not even a session anymore. It was like testimonies and like wrapping it up, right? Because it was the last thing before we leave. So I was like, no. And I was like ignoring her, like, you can go. And I already went to prayer that morning too. They had a morning prayer. So I was like, oh, I'm good. I already got my prayer in, my worship, did my reading, my Bible journaling. I'm good. And she just like wouldn't budge. Like, she was just sitting on the bed. And I'm like, you can go if you want. She's like, alone, like very passive aggressively, like not trying to annoy me, but just being passive. Like, I want you to come with me. And in my head, I'm just like, no, I don't want to go. I'm exhausted. And so fine. I felt bad. And I'm like, do you want me to go with you? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, fine. I have to take a shower. And I like, she doesn't like being late at all. And so when I was hoping that if I said I have to take a shower and stuff like that, like she'd be like, okay, forget it. You know, you're going to be too late. But surprisingly, she was like, it's okay. I'll wait for you. So I was like, what? Like, she's not going to take no for an answer. So in the shower, I was thinking, like, watch it be those moments where you really don't want to go and then God does something spectacular. Because that almost always happens. But I'm telling you, I really didn't want to go. Like, I was determined that I already thought I wasn't going to go. So whatever, I go. And they start doing testimonies. And mind you, they already, like, planned. Like, people already knew who was going to speak, right? To give a head, like, a chance. Like, hey. Or I think they asked, like, what's the testimony? And so they already, the girls could know, be prepared, right? Not, like, be shy or embarrassed or anything like that. I think they had, like, 2 girls prepared for testimonies. And the first went up, and then they called the second. And the second one was, like, I don't know if she wasn't there or she was late or something. But as soon as they're like, oh, she's not here? Okay. And she's a pastor, started looking into the crowd. Like, I honestly felt the Holy Spirit telling me, get ready because I'm going to call you. And I was like, what? No. They're like, yeah, get ready because I'm going to call you and you're going to have to like confess everything to everyone. Like, you said it was just Melody, but now I want you to see for yourself that you've completely let this go. And like, what other better way to prove it to yourself that you're free of shame than just confessing in front of everyone? And I was like, no, there's no way she's going to call on me. Like, she's going to call on like newer people or like people that's very close to her. And nope. Yep, she's like called me and I was like, I knew it. Like, I just knew it. It was crazy how God and the Holy Spirit was like speaking to me that whole weekend. And so I got on there and I told, and I was like, I knew that I didn't want to be those people who kind of went around the bush or said, like, I don't know if you guys have heard pastors or leaders just say like, they did something or someone did something and they just never talk about it. And you're left wondering like what happened to your imagination, maybe go worse. And so
kind of like what you're doing right now.
Yeah, but I want people to like get, you know, like I'm going to say it. But and so I was like, okay, I'm not going to be that person. And so I straight up told everyone. And basically what was confessed to Melody and to all the women there, I think it was like 300 plus women, was that I got married. And in my family's eyes and everyone's eyes, it was like, I got married and then I was going to lose my virginity to you. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the case. When I walked down the aisle, we've already had sex. Mm-hmm. I lost my virginity at 19 with you. But that was something like my whole life obviously frowned upon. And I do think 100% fornication is a sin. And so in my mind as a young girl and young lady, I was like, I want to wait till marriage. And that didn't work out. And it wasn't your fault. Like, I remember you being, and my mom always told me, a man will go as much as you let him. Like, it's kind of on you. And I just like asked for it. And you were like, okay, like, you're not going to say no. It takes 2 to tango. Mm-hmm. It's like it was my fault because I feel like you would have respected me if I said no, I didn't want to. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like tell anyone. So in my head, I felt like that burden of like I am a fake. Mm-hmm. Like this is all a lie. And so I said that to everyone and I was like, I know for some people it might not seem like a big deal, but like for this, for me, it's a huge deal. And I just want to get rid of like the shame. Mind you, it didn't even cross my mind as I was like confessing to people of who could be in the audience. Like I just was narrowed in, like I have to tell my story. And I completely forgot. And the reason why I think it's so important because like God in his, and I'm like cry, like I think he, and I think that's the power of shame is like, you feel not loved or you feel like you messed up, you feel like a failure. Mm-hmm. But when you're free of that, it's just like God is saying like, I just wanted to love you. Like, and I can't love you if you don't take off that mask. Mm-hmm. And we think, okay, I'm going to confess it. And then something natural consequence or something bad is going to happen. I just have to deal with it. Right. And I thought that for so long, I was like, the beginning of our marriage was so difficult. And you guys can go back to, I think, one of our first marriage episodes. And I kept telling myself, like, well, I'm going through this because it's like a curse. Like, I deserve this because I sinned. And so this is my natural consequence. We're going to have a tough marriage. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what to expect, but what happened, I could have never imagined. And so I didn't realize in the audience, there's people who were from my previous church. And so as soon as I came down, my best friend, Carrie, like came and hugged me and she was like, I love you so much. I'm so proud of you, which I needed that so much, like that comfort. But then after it was Dalia, which is my mom's best friend. And again, if you guys don't know, but I'm sure everyone knows, my mom passed away and I kept saying like, I wish she didn't because we'd just be becoming best friends. And I had a feeling that if she was still alive, like I would have confessed to her. Like it would have gotten to a point where I felt like I could have told her everything. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I told her, like I kept telling myself like, what would have happened if she found out? Like she would have still loved me, but how would that have worked out? Like I would have never known, right? And so I like had that of like she passed away and I couldn't come clean to her. And so Dalia, my mom's best friend, was in the audience. Again, it didn't even cross my mind. And she came up to me and she hugged me and she like just told me in my ear, like, your mom knew. Your mom knew and she loved you anyway. Like she saw you as a daughter and she never changed her view of you. Mm. And I didn't even know that I needed to hear that. And I just thank God because it just showed me like she still gave me the wedding that I wanted. Even though I felt like I didn't deserve it. And the love and the support. But I felt like, oh, it was such a fake, you know, like I shouldn't get this. Like, who am I? And it just shows that God is like, no, like you sinned, but that doesn't define you. Like, you're still my daughter. You're still her daughter. And so I just thought that was a powerful experience to me. And I'm like, okay, God, like I understand now why you say like completely give it over. Cause in my head, I didn't have shame. In my head, I was like, oh no, there's this thing I haven't said, but I can tell, again, I can tell anyone, I can tell people from the church because they didn't know me my whole life. It's easier. They don't have this expectation of me.
Yeah.
But telling my sister for some reason, or like telling people from my past life, like before marriage mm-hmm. era, then I would double think it. And I think God really wanted me to be like free of that shame and to see, look, this is what's on the other side of confession. Mm-hmm. It's not guilt, it's not slavery, it's not consequence, but it's true freedom and it's love, a love that you didn't even know you were lacking. And so that's what happened in that retreat. And I thought, I came back like super excited because I'm like, I never would have seen that happen that weekend. And it was crazy how it all played out.
Whether you want to reiterate it or add on top of it, I'm going to ask the question, what did you gain from that moment? What did you gain from confession? What did you gain from bringing that to the light?
I gained love without the mask. Mm. So the people that I love so much, like my sister, my best friend, my mom's best friend, for them to love me and me know, like they love me not because of what I do, not because of like who I've pretended to be or how I've acted, but they love me just for who I am. And this mess up, this sin, like didn't change anything. If anything, they admired me more for it. And knowing that I'm like truly loved and there's nothing I can do to take it away from it is something that I feel like everyone should experience.
And this could be a dangerous question, but I'm going to ask it. What would your life have looked like had you never had that moment?
Like if I kept my life without
the confession.
I think it would have looked fake. Like, I mean, not. I don't think much would have changed from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think God in his mercy allows you to speak truth.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you might not be living it, because he uses all for his good. And so he's going to use people, words, his truth to touch people. And so I think maybe what's coming out of my mouth might have stayed the same, but I would have not have experienced what I've been like preaching.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Because the way that I hear it is similar to my experience with compartmentalizing. Because you were like, oh, I didn't even like, I guess, acknowledge or recognize that I was carrying the shame.
Mm-hmm.
Until it was like the light kind of like just shined on it.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, wait, what the heck? There is something there, right? And that's why I asked the question, what would your life have looked like? Because I kind of relate that part to when people ask me, because if you guys don't know, my birthday is on Christmas.
Mm.
And so many people all the time throughout all my ages have asked me like, oh my gosh, that must suck. Like you only get one present, or do you get double presents, or what is it like?
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell them, I wouldn't know any different.
Mm.
So I made the most of it.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Not like I can change it or whatever, right? And so I relate that to like your experience where you were like, I didn't even know. Like I had compartmentalized it so much where I forgot about it. It was there, but I just... And I think if someone were to have asked you before that whole experience or that whole weekend happened, how's your life going? Like, is there anything, you know, you're carrying? I almost guarantee you would have been like, oh, I'm fine. Like, marriage has never been better.
Yeah.
Kids are great. Like, career's going good. I've been on it with my spiritual discipline. Like, you would have been like, oh, my life is rainbows and butterflies, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I asked the question, like, what would your life have looked like? Like, you see your life right now on the other side of the fence where the grass is greener. But had you never made that decision to obey, because it was all obedience, had you never made that decision to obey, what would your life have looked like? Do you think eventually it would have festered up? Or like if that topic of shame, like, which I do believe that, you know, it was a God timing moment, mm-hmm. right? Like you and other people needed to hear those messages that you heard on the weekend, right? But had you, whatever, like at one point you weren't even sure if you can like afford to go, like you not made the decision to go, let's say, and you would have never known, like you've never, it would have never like shined on you or whatever, like, what do you think your life would have looked like? Do you think eventually God would have found a way to like shine that on you and like kind of call it out on you? Or do you think you would have just kept it in the back like forever?
No, I think God in his mercy and grace for sure would have shown a light, because I always, like in my devotional, is like, God, like purify me, make me better, like create in me a pure heart, whatever. Mm. I don't even know things I'm not confessing. That's been my prayer. And there has been, well, it's not like it was in the basement, in a box, within a box. Because there'd be moments where I like thought about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that.
Okay.
You know? But I don't think I felt like super duper convicted about like, oh, you have to share it right now. But there were parts, even I think when we read The Cure, which was years ago, but mind you, like we were reading a book about vulnerability, about masks, and where I'm like, oh, I felt convicted to talk about other things. I talked about like how I cheated and times, but I was like, I'm gonna just leave it at that. Like there was for sure times where I've thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think if anything, it would like festered up. And I think the more you know, and the more you ask, like the more you're obligated to act on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go back to, you know, what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. Like when you're in relationship with God, there's a requirement for growth. Mm-hmm. And with that requirement of growth, when you're walking with Jesus, he's going to call things out in you.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, in one way or another. And I think that if it hadn't been through this retreat, it would have been another way.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that he would have painted it in a nice, beautiful way. Same thing, probably would have called you out, got you convicted, and then you would have done your whole, like, in 24 hours, if it doesn't happen now, I'll never do it, you know? But it is beautiful. And so my question to you, which is probably a little bit easier for you to say now that you're, what, in outside of the box? Mm-hmm. Because I always say, like, to give your opinion, to give advice, it's so easy to do it outside the box. But when you're inside the box, it's a lot different. It's a lot harder.
Yeah.
It's a lot less clear, right? And so, like, when you said, I asked you, what did you gain? You said, I gained love, right? And I think every single person that you were scared that might turn on you or might give you a negative, like, feedback, I think people who truly love you will love you through it all, right? Mm-hmm. And so really what really happened is not that you gained love. That love was always there. Mm-hmm. It's that whole principle of the cure where you took the mask off finally, yeah, and you finally got to, like, receive that love where you felt like the mask was the one receiving the love, the mask of just, like, pretending to be somebody that you're not. And you said it, like, I was just faking it. Like, I was just, you felt like a fraud or whatever. Like, it didn't feel real.
Yeah.
And it's not until you take that mask off that you realize, oh, these people with or without this mask love me. Mm-hmm. But I feel it when I fully show who I really am, right? Which is very beautiful. But what advice would you give to somebody who is dealing with shame now? Like, I mean, and I'm sure that you're going to say, you know, hey, confess, you know, share it, just realize that you're wearing a mask, you know. But again, if I were to have told you, I think, if I were to have told you before your whole retreat thing, you would have been like a lot more resistant, I think.
Yeah.
And I feel like the way that it happened, you were already vulnerable to something happening, right? Especially when you go to, like, retreat, you kind of, like, open yourself up and you're usually just like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'm with it. Mm. You know, whereas, you know, like, everyday life, I feel like most people are a little more closed. Like, they're not, unless they're, like, really intentionally, like, God, I could hear you or see you anywhere where I go. So I'm walking around open no matter where I go. But yeah, usually especially with American culture, you know, you're always on, you're always working, you're always hustling. It's you're not really walking around like, God, where are you? I'm waiting for you. Like, let's go. I know you're going to talk to me, you know? And so had I brought it up to you or had somebody else, maybe you during, like, the week or whatever, you would have been, like, a little more resistant. Like, nah, I don't know. Probably not. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to somebody dealing with shame or?
I do think praying is super duper important. And I feel like so many people are like, oh, cause you don't really, like, see a result right then and there. And it can be tedious, right? And feel one-sided at least. But even at the retreat, I said this to everyone, I was like, I was dealing with a lot of pride. Like, I was like, what can this retreat teach me? Like, because I've been to so many in my life. Mm-hmm. I've even helped create so many. Like, as a pastor's kid, the retreats, I don't want to say lose its specialty, but kind of. We're just, like, been there, done that, right? Like, I was like, I'm going to support, because it's a nice resort. Like, I want to be with friends. I was like, I'm going to go in for community, right?
And so you're going there to relax. Let's be honest.
Relax and community.
Mm-hmm.
And even then,
you bailed on the community to go to a wedding.
But we did do community when we were there. That's a fact. But even though I feel like I didn't go with that posture of, like, God, it's a retreat, I'm expectant. Like, my job was like, this is testimony time. I'm not going to miss anything. Like, I just want to sleep. Mm-hmm. I did pray before then, like for the retreat, like, God, may you move in the retreat, if not just for me, but for the woman, like, may we see your hand. Like, I for sure kept praying for the retreat, for the pastors, for the leaders. And I think if you're dealing with shame or you're feeling convicted, like listening to this and you're like, okay, I want to be free, like praying to God. I think God, we see him in our head as this all-powerful deity, like maybe like Zeus or something, like with a thunderbolt, loose temper, because we've heard of like gods and goddesses that way in mythology where they just like fight all the time. Or maybe you've had a father who is very impatient and very out to get you. And as soon as you do a consequence, okay, you're getting punished. And a teacher, whatever, like we see people who, in our life, who should be role models as not what a conditional love looks like. And so I think we kind of are afraid of it. But I think like praying for it, saying like, God, you know my heart. You know that I want to be free of this. And so set the stage, like lead me. Like I do feel like he is a gentle, loving father. And so asking for that right moment, for those conversations, for everything to line up, to not feel like forced. I do think you're going to be uncomfortable, because I was uncomfortable. I don't think everything's going to go easy, mm-hmm. because it wasn't easy to put yourself, to tell my sister, to put myself in that situation, to tell put myself in front of everyone, not knowing what the outcome was going to be like. I couldn't tell you what people were going to react. Like, I was definitely uncomfortable. So it's not going to be comfortable. It's not going to be something that you know and you can predict. But I feel like if you include God and the Holy Spirit, you will see his gentle side and his loving side through it all.
So is what I'm hearing you say that you must pray for the right time to confess?
Not for the right time, but so that when you confess, you can feel him, you can see him.
You don't.
I don't want to say like.
You don't think the simple act of confession will open that door?
Yeah, I do. But I do think there's a faith aspect. Like, faith without action is dead. And so people can just be go like, confess, just that act. Like, I just want to get this over with. And not the faith part of, God, I'm walking in this knowing you are this loving, knowing that you are. So I feel like we have to marry the act with the faith. Does that make sense? And I feel like prayer is just your faith.
Because I feel like that we should have a rhythm of confession, to be honest.
Sure. Because we should have a rhythm of prayer.
Yeah. So I think we should have a rhythm of confession to God, mm-hmm. and we should have a rhythm of confession to, you know, a selected few, you know. And the reason why I say that is because, okay, so one of the things that you said was, when I confessed, I felt love. And I feel like what shame does is like builds this like 30-foot thick wall between you and love. Mm. And not only that, but if the analogy of a tree, I think that's in Psalms or Jeremiah or both, where the tree is planted next to the river, it sends out its roots, it gets, you know, all the life and stuff from the living water. And I feel like shame also cuts those roots off of you, mm. where you are no longer connected to the living water, where you're starting to shrivel up. And that's, I mean, some people might even say like, that's exactly what I feel when I have shame. Like, I feel like I'm not connected to God. I feel like I'm not connected to people. I feel like I don't feel love. I feel like I'm alone. I feel like I'm isolated. I feel like I have no place. I feel like I can't share anything with anybody. I feel like I can't be myself. And that can be super debilitating. Just imagine a tree without its roots getting its nutrients and its source from something. Like, it's going to shrivel up. It's going to die. And I feel like that's what shame does. And when you're going through that, I think to practice the rhythm of confession is to continuously crack the wall of shame, to like literally push back shame and be like, I'm going to continuously practice this, although I'm scared, because to confess, there's fear involved.
Yeah.
I mean, when we talked about the topic of focus, and we were like, what is an enemy doing? Like, the enemy really has no power. Mm-hmm. The only thing the enemy can really do is steal your focus, because to steal your focus is to steal your direction. It's to steal, you know, like, instead of you focusing on the things that God has placed in front of you, it's going to distract you in any way possible, mm-hmm. right? And so what the enemy is doing at that moment, when you're even thinking about, I'm about to confess, is I'm going to start throwing fear at you. And I'm going to start putting thoughts into your head. Like, what if this person reacts horribly to you? Mm-hmm. What if this person thinks that you're the most disgusting person in the whole world? What if this person spreads this, and we call it rumor, but spreads this whole thing to all your friends and circles, and they all literally see who you are? Because that also couples together with, like, the imposter syndrome of, like, I don't want to be myself because I don't feel like people are going to like who I really am.
Yeah.
Like, that all couples together. Like, people that have shame are like, I can't show my true self. People are not going to like me. I don't even like me. I felt like a failure. Mm-hmm. I feel like a failure. I feel like I'm a fraud. I feel like I'm a fake. I've been doing this for so many years. Like, there isn't anybody more faker on earth than me, myself. Like, there you go, putting yourself down. There you go, just... the enemy's just feeding off of this, just like, yep, you're doing my job for me. Mm. You know, and for you to practice that confession is for you to be like, what you always say, you're shining the light on it. It is what it is. And as I practice to confess, I am also releasing the fear, and I'm also believing in faith, and hopefully in relationship, that the people that are going to love me are going to love me no matter what. Mm-hmm. And the people that I have really close to me, I'm hoping, are really good people, to where they are humble enough to know that they also have screwed up.
Yeah.
And they have also been in that same scenario where they have needed love when they felt like they didn't never deserved love.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's empathy. That's humility. That's relatable. Like, I've been there before, like, where I hear somebody and my first instinct is like, kind of like turn my head a little bit, but then God kind of like turns it back and it's like, buddy, you are no better. Yeah. They sin differently than you, but you are no better. You have been there before. And I think that's important to practice confession. And I do believe that part of practicing confession is to practice with people.
Yeah.
Because some of us can sing the song of, I am practicing confession. I'm confessing to God all the time. And I feel like some of us have the mentality of, well, God's not going to really do anything to me. Like, if I tell him right now and I don't hear him, I didn't hear any negativity. So I'm walking around like, oh, I confess, I'm good, blah, blah, blah. Confess with people. And I believe it's biblical. I don't know what verse it is, but it's... is that,
James 5:16.
Is that what you looked up?
Yeah.
Okay, what does it say?
James 5:16, it says, therefore confess your sins to each other mm-hmm. and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective.
Exactly.
And that's why I think I completely agree with everything you've said. That's what I would tell a person to pray. Because for sure, I do think if you feel like you can only confess to God, then you're still dealing in shame.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 100%.
And I think that's what God was trying to teach me. Like, can you confess to your sister? Okay, can you confess to the whole church? Mm-hmm. Like, not because I do think I had to confess to my sister, but I don't think I had to confess to the whole church. Like, I didn't do it to them. They didn't get hurt by it. But I think it was God saying, like, are you really free? Like, do you feel like you're really free? Like, it was, I had to do it, right? I don't know. Everyone's going to be told to do something different. Everyone's confessions. I do think you have to confess to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You should be doing community and you should be practicing confession. It's part of Christianity. Now, if God is going to tell you to go on stage, on church, and tell everyone, again, I don't think everyone will be called to do that. But I think I had to for just my personal journey, right? But I do think the prayer part goes hand in hand, again, because I believe faith without action is dead. And I believe And when I pray and then I read my Bible, like it's like coupled together. Mm-hmm. And I think the more, again, that I'm talking to God and building that relationship and getting to know him through his word, the more that I'm knowing him and his character, the more that I'm loving him and recognizing his love for me. And so a lot of the times I think the reason why we're afraid to confess is what exactly what you said is because we fear. But the Bible says that perfect love casts out fear. Mm. And so if we truly know that God loves us and that's done in our intimate time, what people don't see, where our faith is truly built, where our roots are being into the, growing into the waters, like no one sees that. No one is going to see the roots and be like, how long are they? Are they actually doing the work? Like all they're going to see is, again, your confession or mm-hmm. what happens, the growth at the top. But I do think it requires prayer and reading the Bible and knowing God, building that strong faith so that when you're confessing, it's not done in fear. Like I wasn't afraid that I was going to lose my relationship with my sister. And like, I never thought like this church is going to cast me out. Like I never was fearful. I was nervous. I'm like, this is super awkward. Like, I don't know what they might think. Like, but I don't think it was fear. Maybe. I don't know. But I feel like the less fear we have is because we, the more intimate time we have with God. So I feel like that's why I would tell the person, like, just pray. Like, you have to pray so that it becomes like part of your daily rhythm and you're not fearful because you know that you're loved no matter what.
Yeah, and I think just to add on that, like to hear that testimony of yours and then just to couple it with what we talked about a couple weeks ago, where like when you're walking with God, he requires growth.
Yeah.
The only way to know that if you have truly grown is a test. And I feel like you went through a test and God was like, all right, you ready for the next level? Like, I'm gonna test you, like go do what I'm telling you to do. It's a test of obedience. There's blessings on the other side of that obedience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would just reiterate like the you being in shame, you're in a place of like darkness, of shadows, of where you can't see clearly. And the moment that you confess, you step into clarity. Mm. You step into seeing exactly what it is. And I would encourage anybody listening to this to practice that confession. Maybe it's not with a group of people, like you said. Maybe it's with just one person. And I think part of the prayer as well is maybe who should I confess to? Because then I'm right now it's coming up like a scenario where like, some people are like, oh, who you want me to confess to somebody? Okay, cool. I'll confess to somebody who has a similar sin to me. And so they'll be like, all right, cool. That's not a big deal. I deal with that too. But you confess to somebody that A, was your family member, was really close to you, had looked up to you, and that you thought like she might not agree, or obviously not agree, but not like accept the sin that I just like, and the fact that I dragged it on for so long, like 9 years almost, that I never right. told her. Right. And so again, if you're walking with Christ, if you have a relationship, if you're reading your word, like God's going to speak to you in many different ways. So I would encourage you guys always to keep your eyes peeled, your ears ready to hear. But God is going to test you. And usually those tests are not easy tests. And you, what's funny is like, you were like, God, I'll give you 24 hours. This is like, no, I won't give you like a week. I won't give you like, no, God, like I'll give you these 24 hours. After that, I'm putting it back into the compartment. And
yeah,
like,
I'm
going to leave it there. And like, I'm just going to assume, quote unquote, that you don't want me to share with nobody.
Yeah, that it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Which is crazy. But I think that God is going to test you with that confession. And that's one of the, I think, hardest things for a lot of us to do, especially in this generation that we live in, the society that we live in, where everyone wants to be perfect, picture perfect, video perfect, the social media aspect of it all. We only want to show the good stuff. We don't want to show the bad stuff. But it is so important for a generation of people or a select few of people to like stand up and start practicing this and start showing this to other people. Because then we can go back to being our authentic self.
Yeah.
Which many of us are not. Like you yourself said, I was walking around fake for 9 years. You couldn't have said with complete certainty, I am 100% authentic. You couldn't have. Yeah. Without that confession. And so I think it is important for us to start doing this, to show this to other people, for that to like start spreading out. Because also then you start experiencing true love. And true love is, I accept you for your good and your bad. I know that you're trying, and I know that you care, and I know that you have a good heart, and I know that God's got a purpose for you, and I know that you're special, and I know you've made a mistake. I've made mistakes too, and I love you no matter what. Like, to experience that type of love, and I've said it before, is such a level of freedom. And I'm sure that if we were to ask you, like, oh, like, did you feel somewhat like when God kind of like brought it to your attention, like that you were kind of dragging a little bit of weight on, and that when you confess, like that weight just came completely off, and you're like, oh, like I didn't have to be dragging this around, right? Mm-hmm. And that you don't experience that true love until you confess. And we said before, like, you don't experience that true love until you're vulnerable, until you show your true self, your true 100% self. That is when you experience that true love. Now, I'm not saying that you do the same thing that Grace did and you show the whole world or whatever. It might just be with one person. It might be with like a couple of friends. It might be whatever. Like, but show yourself, because that is the only way that you are going to practically practice confession and experience love. Mm-hmm. Because you can kind of, I don't know how to say this, but like the whole thing that I was saying, like, oh yeah, I confess to God all the time. Like, that's, you're practicing it, but like, if you feel like God doesn't speak to you, you're just like, okay, it's all good. Like, but to practice it with somebody like tangible, somebody in front of you, somebody who like is imperfect as well, like that has sin in their life, that could potentially be a ticking time bomb. Like, for you to practice that and for you to experience that type of love, it's next level. Because what you felt through your confession as well was coupled with, my sister loves me no matter what. Mm-hmm. And then you also said that you felt like God was like, I loved you. Like, I've been waiting to love you. I just needed you to open the door. I needed you to take off the mask. I wanted to show you this whole time that I loved you regardless of any mess up or any spill or anything. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that you could do that will separate you from God's love. And that's what he wants you to experience. And that's what he wants everybody to experience.
Yeah.
But that comes to vulnerability and confession.
Yeah, for sure. And I think how like the verse says, how practicing confessing to each other and the power, like prayer becomes powerful and effective. I think when we confess to each other, which God doesn't just say like confess to me, but he says confess to each other.
Yep.
I think it is more effective, because then you give people that, I guess, like courage, like I can do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then you stop allowing the accuser to be effective.
Yep.
Because I think as soon as you feel like I can't share with that person because this is like, you automatically give the enemy that stronghold in your life. Because he's already working in that darkness and that shame and those little thoughts of like, oh yeah, you can't tell them. Why? Mm-hmm. Because it is really bad. Why? Because you are not who you say you are. But when we give it out there, we get that power back from the enemy. And then it's like, okay, I don't care. Who knows? Like, anyone can know, because I don't care anymore. Like, the judge already said that I'm forgiven. I paid for it, so I don't have to pay for this anymore. Mm-hmm. But if you still walk in that uncertainty of like, oh, do I care? Or am I like worried? That shows that we haven't completely understood that we are free and loved and forgiven.
Yeah.
And so I hope this story, again, whether you're just watching because you're chismosos or because you genuinely wanted to know about shame, inspires some of you guys to be like, all right, I'm going to start praying and I'm going to start practicing confession because it's what we're called to do. And trust me, on the other side of that is true love. And God wants you to experience it. It's not so that he can say, you see, you have to pay for it one way or another. But Jesus already paid for that shame. He already paid for that. He knew you were going to sin and he said, I'll take on for it so that he doesn't have to. Mm. And I feel like sometimes we feel like we have to pay for it. And so we're afraid of what the consequence might be. We know on the other side of that, it's not a perfect world. Like, but God is saying it's not perfect, but I've already paid for it. So like, what are you afraid of?
Yeah.
But we can't experience that if we're still dealing with shame. And so thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for always interacting with this. We ask that you share it to someone that you think can benefit from it, that you hit that like button, follow if you haven't already. We love sharing our stories to get better every day, but also for you guys to get better just one person at a time, one confession at a time. Mm-hmm. So until next episode, bye.
Bye.